ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 11, chapter 28, text number 34. Yata
hi
panor
udayo
nir chakshusham tamo
nihanyan
na
tru
sat
Vidate
evam
saniksha
nipuna
sati
me
hanyat
samishram
purusasya
budhe.
Yata evano dayone chakshusham
Samo
nihanyan na tu sati
date
Evam
samiksha nipuna
sati me
Anya
samishan
purusasya
budhe.
Word for word,
yata,
as
He,
indeed,
Mahano,
of the sun,
Udaya,
the rising,
near,
human,
Chakshusham,
of eyes,
Tamaha,
the darkness,
Nihanyat,
destroys,
Na,
not,
Tu,
but,
Sat,
Objects that exist.
Vidate,
create.
Evam,
similarly.
Samiksha,
full realization.
Nipuna,
potent.
Sati,
true.
Me,
of me.
Hanyat,
destroys.
Dameshram,
the darkness.
Purusasya,
of a person,
Budhe,
in the intelligence.
Translation.
When the sun rises,
it destroys the darkness
covering man's
eyes, but it does not
create the objects
they then see
before them,
which in fact
were existing all along.
Similarly,
potent and factual
realization of me
will destroy the darkness
covering
a person's true
consciousness.
I'll read text
35 as well.
Esa
sayandrati adro
prameyo
mahanu
bhuti sakalanu
bhuti
eko dvitiyo
vacha samvirame
yeneshita
bhaga sabhas
charanti.
The Supreme
Lord is self-luminous,
unborn
and immeasurable.
He is pure
transcendental
consciousness and
precedes everything.
One
without a second,
he is realized
only after
ordinary words
cease.
By him the
power of speech
and the life
airs are set into
motion.
Purport.
The
Supreme Lord is
self-luminous,
self-manifested,
whereas
the individual living
entity is
manifested by him.
The Lord
is unborn,
but the living
entity, because of
material
designative
coverings,
takes birth
in conditioned
life.
The Lord is
immeasurable,
being
all-pervasive,
whereas the
living entity is
localized.
The Supreme Lord
is
Mahanubhuti,
the
totality of
consciousness,
whereas the
living entity is a
tiny spark of
consciousness.
The Lord
is Sakalanubhuti,
omniscient,
whereas the
living entity is
aware only of
his own
limited
experience.
The
Supreme Lord
is
one,
whereas
living entities
are innumerable.
Considering
all these
contrasts
between the Lord
and ourselves,
we should not
waste time like
the foolish material
scientists
and philosophers
who struggle
to find the
origin of this
world by their
insignificant
mental speculation
and word
jugglery.
Although
one may discover some of
the gross laws
of material
nature through mature research, there is no hope of achieving the absolute truth by such petty endeavors. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Janandana Salakaya Sakshwa Minitanya Natasna Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistan Sakitanya Rabhutale Swayam Vagadamaya Dadachi Sakarantika Vancha Kalpa Tridishta Kripasim Nidhyaya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this chapter is entitled Jnana Yoga, with the aim, of course, of establishing our eternal relationship with Krishna. So in these two texts, 35 and 34 and 35, even before that we're hearing of the matter and spirit, and we're hearing how the living entity who's originally pure consciousness has become contaminated by the false ego of thinking I am a material body, of thinking that I am made of matter, gross and subtle. So in the beginning of this chapter there is a lot of explanation that Krishna is giving to Uddhava, explaining how this false concept, which is the false ego, is the cause of the suffering and the anxiety and misery that the conditioned soul is experiencing in this material world. So in the 15th text it's very interesting that Krishna is explaining how when we're in our dreaming state or when we're in our illusion state, we experience all sorts of things like lamentation, fear, confusion, hankering, birth, death, etc. But these are all actually experiences of the false ego. So when we get to study these Vedic texts, when we get to understand how to separate matter from spirit, we get to understand that we actually have in our pure state, we have no suffering, we have no reason to lament, we have no reason to fear, because we are originally pure consciousness. We are actually free from all these different ailments. So similarly to the body as well, it's experiencing these different conditions of the material nature because we have forced ourselves to accept the material body as the self. So from the body to the senses, to the mind, to the intelligence, to our contaminated consciousness, we are experiencing life based on the platform of the false ego. So the false ego is responsible so for what it appears to be giving us so-called happiness and distress while we're living in the material world. But we understand that matter itself, the material body, is dead. Right? There's no life in matter, in the material body. But the living entity comes to take shelter of this body, thinking that the body is the real self. So we become conditioned in the material body. So just as the example has been given in the past of how the living entity is pure, but when it comes to contact with the material energy, it becomes covered. We cannot see our real identity. Just as when a raindrop is falling from the sky, it's pure, it has not been tainted by anything. But as soon as it hits the ground, the raindrop becomes muddy, so it's difficult for us to see water in mud. So this is what happens when the living entity comes into contact with material nature. We become covered and we cannot see our real identity. We cannot understand who we really are. So this jnana that has already been explained in the 11th canto in the previous chapters is again given by Krishna, and in this text, specifically 35, it's explaining how we are separate entities, separate individuals from Krishna, that we're not of course, the philosophy explains that we are one with Krishna, but we also have our individuality. So it gives a clear distinction between Vibhuatma and Anuatma, the living entity and the supreme soul. So the example that's given here is that we have only knowledge of our, we're only aware of our limited scope of activities within one body, whereas Krishna is aware of all the activities of different living entities. So we're very minute in comparison to Krishna. And when we forget how minute we are, we start thinking that we can actually be the enjoyers, and we can actually understand that we can actually enjoy the material energy. We try and lord it over, we try and act like the Supreme Lord. But when the false ego acts in this way, it only brings about lamentation, fear, anxiety, distress, hankering, etc. So this false ego, this concept of thinking, I am matter, I am temporary, this is something that the process of devotional service is directly trying to cut off. So the knowledge that we're being given, this jnana, is actually supposed to do three things. It's supposed to give pleasure to the living entity, because we're hearing about Krishna. And the nature of the soul is that it is always pleasure seeking. So when we get into contact with the original pleasure potency, Krishna, we also get pleasure. So we cannot experience pleasure separately from Krishna. The so-called pleasure that we experience from the tricks of the material energy is actually suffering. Middle scopes of suffering, little scopes of minute happiness, etc. And this is all based on the body and the senses. But when we take to this knowledge given by Krishna himself, Krishna explaining this knowledge to his devotee Uddhava, then we get to actually have real pleasure. We get to experience the pleasure of the soul. Because when we live in the material world, the pleasure that we get is dovetailed to the body. If we're not into direct association with Krishna, then we're actually not experiencing any pleasure at all. We're conditioned to thinking that it's pleasure because we've been playing this game since time immemorial. So naturally the mind thinks, yes, this is pleasure. The mind thinks taking intoxication or having illicit activities or being extremely lusty over and over again, this is my kind of happiness. And as you see with, you know, if you take a dog or a cat and you try and make it as clean as possible, you give it a shower, you know, you get dental floss and you floss the cat's teeth or the dog's teeth. You take it to a dog dentist, which exists these days. Or you take it to doggy, what's it called down there? Diggity doggy daycare or something. There's a daycare center for dogs just here in Victoria. So you take it to all these different things and you try and pamper this living entity. But then the only thing that it wants to do is become dirty again, because it's conditioned. I'm a dog, I'm supposed to stink, I'm supposed to wee all over the joint, I'm supposed to pass stool here and there and bark and do so many things. Right? So this is when we're extremely conditioned. Oh, I want to taste dry stool and wet stool. This is my mode of enjoyment. And the hogs, they accept that this is luxury, this is five class. Right? You take your hog to the Hilton, or you take your hog somewhere else and you put it on a table and you feed them the best salmon or the best, I don't know what people eat, turkey or whatever dogs eat these days. And they will just spit it out. You know, they want to go in the garbage can and take out rotten things and eat them, etc., etc. So in this material world, we have become conditioned to think that this suffering is actually happiness. Right? If we had any intelligence at all, we would understand that when we indulge in the senses, if we follow the lead the senses are pulling us, you know, we can see that we've never been happy. In our teenage years, I don't know about all of you, but some of us had very interesting teenage years. Your senses pull you and your hormones are pulling you to do certain things. And you're thinking, oh yeah, yeah, I'm just going to follow my dream. You know, just follow your dream, follow your heart. You know, follow your contaminated heart, follow your uncontrolled mind, just do what you feel like doing, just
just explore, go traveling and, you know, do all the things that make you feel good. And it has always resulted in just misery. Right, you go somewhere, you follow your hormones or you follow your heart or your mind, and for 2 minutes it feels great, you get a thrill, you have this adrenaline rush, and then you wake up the next day and then you find out, actually this is ridiculous. I've lost all my money, I've lost all respect for myself, I've been humiliated, I've been this and that. And then the material energy, because it has an amazing power, we forget that experience and we go and do it again. And then we forget again the misery and the suffering, and then we go and do it again and again and again. And in this way we're suffering and we're thinking, this is life, because everyone is going through this. My mother went through it, my dad went through it, my sister is going through it, so this is normal. And then we think, this is life, this is how life is supposed to be. You grow up, you go to school, you have a few friends, and then you're not friends anymore. You start working, you get your job, you have your family, you have your ups and downs, and then you work hard and you become a good citizen. You know, you pay your taxes, you have your charity that you give donation to, you're a nice person. Right? You work hard, you take care of your mother, you take care of your father, and you know, you have your nieces and nephews and you buy them presents for Christmas. And then you have a health crisis, or your family member has a health crisis, and then you help out, or you build a big thing in your mom's village, or whatever. You know, you do all these things. This is normal. But the reality is, you don't know what the heck life is about. The reality is, you don't know what you're doing with your life. You're just following, what's the saying in, you're following the, oh, I forget it in English. You're just going with the flow. So sometimes, you know, you have all these songs, you know, in Hollywood, in Bollywood, people are singing their hearts out about how she did this to me or how she broke my heart or whatever. And then we listen to that all the time and we're thinking, oh, and then we also get depressed. Who was saying the other day, giving an example how sometimes people go and watch movies and then it's, you know, it's so tragic or it ends in a tragic way. Or it, you know, it's like a fairy tale movie, and then everyone walks out excited. But it has nothing to do with you. It didn't happen to you. Those people don't know you. You know, you're not connected at all. So you live this illusion, thinking, "Oh, this makes me so happy. Life is so good. It's so great." But we don't have an understanding of who we are, because we're just, you know, working on the platform of the false ego. It's just stimulating for the senses, it's stimulating for the mind. So we think this is normal. What the material energy does, we think this is happiness. But it's actually not, because there cannot be any happiness experienced by the false ego. The false ego's aim is to just give us suffering. And the aim of knowledge, especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant to, you know, give us, you know, real vision, to see that this is not actual happiness. This is suffering. I've been conditioned to suffer by the material energy. This is how powerful Maya is. But if we read these qualities that Krishna is explaining, self-luminous, unborn, immeasurable, pure transcendental consciousness, we are part and parcel of Krishna. So this means that we have these qualities in minute quantities. So if we go into a science lab, or if we go down the ocean, we take a little bit, a cup of ocean water, and we go and give our friend, or we do something in our house to decorate or whatever. You know, we have the same quality as the ocean does, but in minute quantity. So the salt is still there, the minerals are still in that water, but it's just in a smaller amount. So Krishna has these qualities of being self-luminous, of being pure consciousness, of being full of knowledge, full of eternity and bliss. And we also have it. We also have that quality. The pure ego, the pure consciousness has those, the pure entity, sorry, has these qualities as well. But when we tell ourselves and when we convince ourselves that we're the false ego, then we get to forget all of this. And these are not manifest. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the section where Krishna is explaining the qualities of the soul is this verse 20, Na jayate mriyate vakarachin nayanam budva bhavita vana bhuya ajonicha sasvatiyam purano nahanyate hanyamani sarire. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, and permeable. He is not slain when the body is slain. And in there, there's another quote, a very similar verse from the Katha Upanishad. It's the same verse, but they've just added, there's one word that is different. So that one word is vipassit, which means learned or with knowledge. So the living entity, we're actually supposed to be in knowledge of who we really are and in knowledge of who we're not. So we know that we're not the false ego. At least the people in this room, they're coming, we're all trying to come to the point where we understand that we're not material combination in its gross and subtle form. We're trying to understand that. And we know that if we act upon the false ego, we further increase our imprints of being the body, being from a certain country, being from a certain continent, you know, belonging to a certain caste, etc., etc. We're trying to move away from all these different things. So this knowledge is supposed to, this jnana that Krishna is giving in the Srimad Bhagavatam is supposed to actually open our eyes, remove this veil of ignorance of thinking we're something that we're not. And this is in different degrees, just like Bhagavad Gita is giving different degrees in the second chapter, I think, explaining how you have different levels of sleep, or you have dust covering the mirror, you have the embryo within the womb of a mother, and then you also have smoke that is covering fire. So we have these different degrees of coverings. And to the level that we take to the process of devotional service intensely, with care and attention, we can get to remove these different layers of ignorance. So here, when we hear about Krishna, we're supposed to understand that three things are supposed to be happening while we apply the process of devotional service. So we're supposed to get pleasure, nourishment, and we're supposed to experience cessation of material misery. These three things should happen at the same time. Just as when you eat your favorite preparation, you know, pakora. Right, a pakora that's been deep fried in very good quality ghee. Right, so you put it in, you cook it, and then it's all brown, golden, juicy on the outside, nice and hot. So you bite that pakora after it's been offered to Krishna with love and devotion. You bite that pakora, and then at the same time you get pleasure. Right, you taste the ghee, you taste the pakora, the nice spicing. You know, the ghee is dripping through your hands, on your cheeks. Right, there's pleasure that you're getting nourishment at the same time, and your hunger goes away. So the next time we're all eating a pakora, we can just meditate on what it's doing to us. You know, there's pleasure, there's nourishment, and the cessation of hunger. Right, the hunger goes away. So when we hear about Krishna, when we read about Krishna, when we do anything to do with Krishna, these three things are supposed to happen at the same time. Because Krishna, you know, he's the source of all transcendental pleasure. So we hear about Krishna properly. No, not just being there physically while the Bhagavatam class is going on, while Sanyasi's class or Bhagavad Gita class is going on. We're not just there physically, but we're actually trying to listen to the words Krishna is speaking. So we will get pleasure out of it, because the only way that a pure living entity gets pleasure is from hearing topics about Krishna from the devotees. So we get pleasure, and the soul gets nourished. Right, the soul awakens, it becomes alive from hearing topics about Krishna. And then all these material desires that are coming in, like, you know, like a gazing, like a burning fire. You have all these material desires that have taken stock in the heart. They become washed away. So when we hear about Krishna, these three things are supposed to happen. So we're going to understand I'm separate from Krishna. Krishna is supreme. I am very infinitesimal. I am minute part and parcel of Krishna. And for me to be happy, to enjoy, I have to naturally connect myself to the source. This is a very simple understanding. And when you connect yourself to the source, there's a process for doing that. Hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes and activities. But there's a very important key element in this process of bhakti that makes it extremely relishable and very easy to perform. Srila Prabhupada always warns that we do not hear topics about Krishna from non-devotees, from those who don't understand the glories of Radha and Krishna, that we always hear from the devotees. So it's the devotees actually who are always carrying Krishna in the heart. And Krishna says he is seated in the hearts of his devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining in the verse Machit Matat Prana that Krishna, his devotees are always conversing with one another and enlightening and enlivening one another about topics about him. So in the association of devotees, we're supposed to take to the nine processes of devotional service, hearing attentively with a desire to understand Krishna's pastimes, or to attempt, because we can't really understand Krishna in full, but to have this desire, this intense longing to hear about Krishna. That is a very good sign in devotional service, when you really want to hear about Krishna more and more. And this can happen very easily in the association of devotees, when we chant attentively. So when you chant attentively, you're hearing about Krishna, then naturally you will want to read about Krishna. Your hunger or your thirst will increase for Krishna. So when you read more about Krishna, you want to chant his names more. So all these, this is like a competition, you're hearing and chanting. You hear more, you want to chant more. You chant more, you want to hear about Krishna more. And this was the case with Rukmini. Rukmini always used to hear about Krishna when the different rishis and sages would come and visit her father. So she always heard about Krishna from Narada Muni. So many different devotees of Krishna would come. And just from that hearing about Krishna, she became extremely attracted to Krishna. Although she had never seen Krishna, she had never met Krishna, but by hearing, she started seeing Krishna. So by hearing the holy name, we will be able to have a relationship with Krishna. And when that relationship with Krishna comes, all these material desires start falling away. All these different impediments or all these different things that are imposed by the false ego will start going away. And in the beginning of this chapter, it's explaining that the false ego, the way to kill this disease is to actually serve the devotees of the Lord. So this is, I find this to be quite interesting, because I thought, you know, false ego, yeah, I thought the servants of Srila Prabhupada would specify more on, let's say, hearing attentively or performing certain types of devotional service, but they specifically stress serving the devotees of Krishna. This is something that will get rid of this false ego of thinking I'm the enjoyer, I'm the center of all my activities. Because in the association of devotees, you have sincere souls who have dedicated their lives to hearing and chanting about Krishna. And because the association is so powerful, it will inspire us to do the same. Just as if you want to become a drunkard, you just hang out with people who drink. If you want to become a good singer, you'll hang out with people who do the same. If you want to become a good brahmachari, you'll associate with those who are very properly established in the brahmachari ashram. They will give you that motivation, that encouragement. So the same thing applies when you want to hear about Krishna, or when we're trying to get rid of material desires, because desires are always there, but we just have to change the type of desires we have. And in the association of devotees, it becomes very easy to change these desires when we see how to properly apply the process of devotional service. So the process is intact, the process is pure in itself, but because we have become conditioned, we have sometimes a little bit of a difficulty in applying the process of devotional service. But if we're amongst devotees, we can properly apply that process of devotional service, and hence this false ego can be removed. So it's not only on our own strength, we rely very much on the mercy and the blessings of the devotees of the Lord. And in this way we can get to understand Krishna in his activities, Krishna's in his personality. From chanting about Krishna we get to hear more about Krishna, and from our hearing, you know, we will be able to see Krishna. And when we take shelter of divine scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll hear descriptions of, you know, different devotees in Vrindavan, or Uddhava delivering the message to the gopis, etc., the description of the different pastimes in Vrindavan. So by hearing those pastimes, we can actually perform a type of meditation whereby when we read, as it's explaining, you know, the autumn season in Vrindavan, we can actually see Vrindavan from hearing Krishna book. We can see through the eyes of the acharyas. So they give us descriptions about Vrindavan, and we can purify our mind as we read what the rivers are like, the lotuses, the different breezes, etc. We can actually get to see Vrindavan in its pure form. So this all comes by the blessings of the devotees, by their constant association and by their sincere endeavors to always remember Krishna and never to forget him. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Yes, Prabhu.
So if we want to become a good drinker, should we tell people that if you want to enjoy some nectar as an entity, keep on drinking, that you want to keep on drinking even if you're full? And if you want to remember the taste of Krishna, that's for some other reasons, they don't have a high taste.
Yeah, so they don't they don't have a higher taste, so to what the higher taste is, you can give them some prasadam. You can give them the chanting of the holy name. That's how you can help people who have a lower taste for Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.